The Missing Prince by G.E. Farrow. Chapter 1. Piero and the Moon. Boy was far too excited to go to sleep, so he lay gazing at the crescent moon, which shone through the window opposite his bed, and thought of all the wonderful things which had happened on this most eventful of days. To begin quite at the beginning, he had in his thoughts to go right back to yesterday, when he had been sent to bed in the middle of the day so that he might be rested for his long night journey to Scarborough with his uncle. And then after having been asleep all the afternoon, he had been awakened in the evening just about the time when he usually went to bed and, treat of treats, had been allowed to sit up to the table to late dinner with his aunt and uncle. Soon after dinner, they had started for their long drive to the station through the brightly lighted streets which Boy had never before seen at night time. And when at last King's Cross Station was reached, they had been hurried into a carriage with rugs and pillows and were soon steaming through the suburbs of London. Boy had found plenty of amusement in watching the flashing lights out of the window till, as the train got further and further away from the town, the lights became fewer and fewer, and he drew the curtain and settled himself comfortably in a corner with a pillow and a rug. His uncle was deeply buried in his paper, and Boy did not like to disturb him, so he picked up Punch, which had fallen to the floor, and began to look at the pictures. He must have fallen asleep soon afterwards, for he did not remember anything else till they reached York, where they had to change trains, and where they had hot coffee and sandwiches. And then, when the train started again, Boy's uncle had pointed out to him the square towers of York Minster, showing clearly against the green and gold sky of early morning. And then Boy had gone to sleep again and did not wake up till they reached Scarborough, where a carriage was waiting to take them to the hotel. And Boy looked about him with great interest as they drove through the half-deserted streets, for it was still very early in the morning. He could see the ruins of an old castle at the end of the street, and as they turned a corner, the sea flashing in the morning sunlight burst into view. A boy thought that he had never before seen anything so beautiful. There was the great bay with the castle at one end and Oliver's Mount at the other, the quay and the little lighthouse, and a lot of ships. While out at sea was a whole fleet of brown-sailed fishing smacks coming in with their spoil of fish. Hundreds of seagulls were wheeling round and round, uttering their peculiarly shrill cry, and altogether it was a most beautiful sight. The boy's uncle had stopped the carriage for a few moments so that they might admire it, and then they had driven to the hotel at the top of the cliffs. And after having a refreshing wash, had gone down to a large room where a number of ladies and gentlemen were having breakfast. Boy had been far too excited to eat much, particularly as his uncle had promised him a pony ride at 11. So, as soon as breakfast was over, he had stood by the window watching the people passing. Till, oh joy of joys, there came to the door of the hotel the loveliest little pony with such a long tail and mane, and his uncle's big chestnut horse, Raja, which had been sent down by train the day before. Yes, what a delightful time it had been, to be sure. As they rode down through the valley park to the seashore, and what a splendid canter they had on the hard sand. And then, as they rode slowly back again, Roy noticed some beautiful sandcastles which the children were building on the shore, collecting pennies and boxes for the hospitals from those who stopped to admire them. Lovely castles with flags and trees and toy animals out of Noah's Ark, and quaint little rustic bridges and garden seats in the gardens belonging to them. And Boy had thought how jolly it would be if one could be small enough to walk about in them. Then he had heard someone singing, and his uncle had taken him to where a large crowd was gathered around some curiously dressed people in white costumes with big black buttons and with big frills around their necks and at their wrists. And they wore black skull caps with white conical caps over these. And they were called, so Boy found out, the Piero Troop. And one of them was singing about a little tin soldier who was in love with a beautiful doll with eyes that opened and shut with wire, but who would not have anything to say to him because he was only marked 1 and 9, while another soldier on the shelf above him was marked 2 and 3. Until presently, someone changed the labels and marked him 2 and 3, and the other one 1 and 9. And then the little doll had altered her mind and had promised to marry him, and had forsaken the other poor fella, who was now marked only 1 and 9. The boy was very much amused at the song, but felt very sorry for poor 1 and 9, and kept talking about it all the way back to the hotel as they went back to luncheon, which was, of course, boys' dinner. In the afternoon, they had gone for a lovely drive in an open carriage all through the beautiful Forge Valley. And then after tea, Boy had been taken to the spa to hear the band play. And now, after all these wonderful treats, he was lying, as I said before, wide awake in his little strange bed, watching the moon through the half-open window. What a big moon it was, to be sure. Quite the largest Boy had ever seen. He thought, and surely, yes, surely there is someone sitting in it playing up on a banjo. What? It's Piero! And the moon is coming nearer and nearer, till Boy can hear that he is still singing about the little tin soldier. In a great state of excitement, Boy sat up in bed. I wonder if he's coming here, he thought as he watched eagerly. Yes! Closer and closer came the moon, till presently Piero stepped onto the windowsill and, pushing the window further open, jumped lightly onto the floor and made Boy a polite bow. I've brought you an invitation, he said, to the wedding festivities in connection with the little tin soldier's marriage with the dolly girl. And he handed Boy a large envelope with a red seal. Oh, how kind of you, said Boy, forgetting even his surprise in the delight of receiving such a novel invitation. He hastily opened the envelope and found a card within bearing the following words: Mr. and Mrs. Waxdoll request the pleasure of Master Boys' company at the wedding festivities celebrating the marriage between their daughter, Miss Dolly Girl, and Captain 2 and 3, Royal Tin Hussars, RSVP Sandcastle, The Shore, Scarborough. How splendid, said Boy. Can you please tell me, sir, what RSVP means? I've seen it on an invitation cards before. I'm not quite certain, replied Piero. But in this case, I think it must mean ridiculous society and violent papa. You see, being a toy wedding, they are obliged by toy etiquette to ask all the articles on the same shelf as the bride and bridegroom. And so the company is bound to be rather mixed. And the bride's father is afflicted with the most violent temper you have ever heard of. Dear me, said Boy, perhaps I had better not go. Oh, it'll be all right, said Piero. Whenever he feels his temper getting the better of him, he very wisely shuts himself up in a room by himself till it's all over. So you need not be in the least afraid. But I say, we had better be starting, you know, it's getting rather late. Boy hurriedly dressed himself, and taking Piero's hand, he stepped from the windowsill into the moon, which was conveniently close to the window. It was very much like a boat, Boy thought, as he sat down and made himself comfortable on one of the little cushion seats which stretched from one side of the moon to the other. They had only floated a very little way down the street, however, when the moon began to descend and then stopped. Just at the top of the long flight of steps near the spa, which led to the seashore. Piero jumped out and, after helping Boy to alight, told him that at the bottom of the steps he would find somebody waiting to conduct him to Sand Castle. "Aren't you coming too?" asked Boy in surprise. "No," replied Piero. "We must be off, the moon and I, or people will wonder what has become of us. Goodbye." And getting into the moon again, he was soon floating rapidly away. The boy was somewhat alarmed at his sudden disappearance and felt half inclined to run back to the hotel. "Perhaps I had better go down to the bottom of the steps, though," he thought, "and see who is there." And he had got halfway down when he suddenly stopped in dismay. Why, he was growing shorter. There could be no doubt about it. He could see, to his great surprise, that he was only about half as tall as he had been when he started running down the stairs. Whatever should he do? The boy now felt really alarmed. Why, if he went on at that rate, there would soon be nothing at all left of him. "What's the matter, sonny?" said a tiny voice near him. The boy looked around but couldn't see anyone. "What's the matter, I say?" said the voice again. "I'm sure I don't know," said Boy, who thought that it was only polite to speak when spoken to, even although he could not see the speaker. "I am growing smaller and smaller, and I don't know whatever to do." "Well, my little man," said the voice, "you're going to the toy party, aren't you? How do you expect to get into Sandcastle, the ridiculous size that you are at present? You will keep on getting smaller and smaller each step you take till you reach the bottom, when you will be the respectable height of 6 inches or so." "6 inches!" exclaimed Boy. "Oh, dear. Oh, dear. What a tiny mite I shall be, to be sure. And I did so want to be big like Uncle." "Do you call 6 inches small?" said the voice. "Why, I am 20 times as small as that." "Are you really? No wonder I can't see you then," remarked Boy. "I should think it isn't very nice to be so insignificant as that, is it?" A sudden pain in his arm made him shout, "Ow!" And while he was wondering whatever could have caused it, he heard the voice repeating these words. "You need not think because I'm small that I've no reputation. Do not hesitate to say I'm known throughout the nation. By every lady in the land, I'm held in high esteem. The strongest men require my aid, however weak I seem. And even though you must fain admit that I'm both sharp and bright, you probably will want my help yourself before tonight. So don't attempt to sit on me. 'Twill not be wise of you. My name An ordinary pin. Did you see the points? I do. Good gracious, exclaimed Boy. Just fancy a pin talking to one. I wonder whatever will happen next. Well, I certainly felt the point if I didn't see it. He continued, rubbing his arm and hurrying down the steps. For he didn't so much mind now. He really knew what to expect about his size.